This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
The Vatican and Rome police are on high alert this week leading up to Easter, and we're likely to see up to 2,000 extra police on the street.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome talking about an anti-terrorism operation in Italy. Details coming up. Also, Abiy Ahmed, former Minister of Science and Technology, is set to be Ethiopia's new Prime Minister. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But our top story, anti-terrorism police carried out searches across Italy early today, arresting a man in turn who is accused of spreading propaganda for the Islamic State militant group. Journalist Josephine McKenna in Rome is covering the story and spoke with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson.
Well, police conducted a total of 13 searches across Italy, with raids being conducted in Milan, Bergamo and other cities as far south as Naples. They arrested what they consider to be the main suspect, a 23-year-old called Elmad Halili, who was arrested on suspicion of participating in the Islamic State organization. Now, he's a Moroccan-Italian. He's accused of being the author of the first piece of Italian-language ISIS propaganda. And police say he was also actively seeking to recruit other individuals for potential attacks.
Now, you had mentioned that Halili is known to the police. Why was it that he was free?
Well, he had served a previous conviction on terror-related charges. That took place in 2015. He was found to have published ISIS texts on the internet. He was sentenced to 2 years in prison and then released, but actively monitored by police, who allege that he continued to publish material glorifying terrorist acts and also videos of ISIS violence and militants in Syria and Iraq. So this seems like that the police and the anti-terrorist police were keeping a very close watch on him, because they are also seeking to link him, or have alleged that he is linked to others that he was seeking to recruit. The police say that he met with Italians who converted to Islam and others from Morocco and Ghana who apparently were already known to police for other crimes. So the charges include waging a campaign of radicalization and proselytism via the internet, but it sounds like there may be other charges related to recruitment as well.
Is there any sign that there was an active plot to commit an act of terrorism?
There doesn't seem to be a particular plot specifically, but in Rome we do hear of these kind of allegations all the time, that ISIS is actively seeking to target Rome, for example, to target the Vatican, to target the Colosseum. That doesn't seem to be the case in this particular instance. Having said that, the Vatican and Rome police are on high alert this week leading up to Easter, and we're likely to see up to 2,000 extra police on the streets. The police will be putting in place what they call a green zone, a no-go zone for heavy trucks in the centre of the city. And so security will be very tight in the coming days here.
That was journalist Josephine McKenna in Rome speaking with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson. For the first time, Ethiopia has picked up a leader from the Oromo ethnic group as prime minister. To brief us on the matter, we have in studio VOA reporter Salem Solomon. Welcome, Salem.
Thanks for having me again.
So who is this new prime minister and how did it all come about?
Well, for the first time, as you said, Abiy Ahmed, who happens to be from a member of the Ethiopia's Oromo ethnic group, a majority that has long felt marginalized in Ethiopia as now the new prime minister in Ethiopia. He was born, here's what we know so far, he was born in Agaro, Oromia region. His mother is Christian, his dad is Muslim, but he's a practicing Protestant. But the reason why everybody is talking about his religion is because of his track record in the past. He's been a leader. He came about in the discussion when the surprise resignation of the former prime minister, Hailemariam Desalegn, announced on he announced his resignation. He was the front runner and he was in the discussion. People were talking about his name a lot. He's very young. He's 41 years old. He has a track record of leadership in the Oromia region. He is a leader in the OPDO, which is the Oromo People's Democratic Organization, a part of the EPRDF, meaning the Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Democratic Front coalition. And so we have there's a lot of discussion about his background and his track record.
So I'm sure Mr. Abiy Ahmed, you said, will be facing a very tricky task of reconciliation and reform. Lots of ethnic tension in that country. So how do you think he is going to go about it?
Very important discussion right now, as you said, is discussion about reform and also the relentless protests that we've been watching in Ethiopia in the past over 3 years over marginalization of different sorts. And so a lot of people are seeing the fact that he's young and the fact that he's from the Oromo ethnic group, a lot of people are seeing as part of some sort of positive reform in Ethiopia. 3 years ago, there was clash between Muslims and Christians in Jemma, and he took the leadership to resolve that conflict. So people are referring to his track record in that sense. Ethiopia is right now under the state of emergency, and OPDO, his party, was voted against the state of emergency at some point, but he was in one of the people who was in absentia, and so it shows a lot of everybody's talking about what his decision is going to be as the new prime minister because of all these past track record that he has.
Yes, very impressive. So, do you think the this former minister of science and technology can convince the country's long-serving ruling coalition to change its authoritarian ways, like repealing, like you mentioned, the widely criticized state of emergency, or freeing, for instance, the 11 high-profile dissidents who were rearrested this week, some of whom had left prison just a month ago?
That's a very good question, and you raise the rearrest of political opposition members, journalists, and bloggers just this Sunday, which we talked about yesterday. That's yet to be seen. But, you know, another important thing that you mentioned, in 2007, Ahmed founded the Internet Security Agency, a group tasked with advising Ethiopia's technological capabilities, and this was largely used for surveillance and also stifling dissent in the past. So we have yet to see what kind of decision that he's going to take in terms of these very controversial issues that we're noticing in Ethiopia, in terms of freeing up the press, freeing up open space for dialogue, freeing up all these conversations that are ongoing. But you raise a very good point about the past and his track record, and also he studied in the U.S. and England before returning to Ethiopia. He seems like a very educated and reformist kind of background, and so a lot of people are excited about his appointment. So we have yet to see. He was voted 108 out of 175 votes according to local reports, and so there are people within the coalition that are not really for him. So it's interesting to watch. So we have yet to see how he manages to reform the political situation in Ethiopia.
Great expectations for Mr. Abiy Ahmed. Thank you, VOA Salem Salomon.
Thanks for having me.
Egypt is wrapping up its three-day election process with little doubt that President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi will win a second term. The only real question is how big al-Sisi's margin of victory will be. The government pushed for a big turnout. It would provide him with an endorsement of the policies he had pursued since taking power in a military coup in 2013. He was facing only one challenger who was perceived as weak after both other possible candidates were arrested or intimidated. With no suspense over the outcome, turnout among the 59 million registered voters has been reported as low, despite a law requiring people to go to the polls. While there were claims of vote buying, the Electoral Commission called the balloting fair and free. Some people said they were enticed to vote by offers of money, food, even improvements for their communities. President Donald Trump's administration will allow the Deferred Enforced Departure, or DED, program for Liberians to expire on March 31st, followed by a one-year wind-down period. DED was initiated in 1991 by then-President Bill Clinton. It permitted Liberians to legally stay and work in the United States until their homeland's devastating civil war was over. When Liberia's war ended in 2003, the country was in shambles, and Presidents George W. Bush and Barack Obama both renewed the DED program until conditions improved. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with a leading advocate for the DED recipients about why they think it should continue.
Amaha Kasa is the executive director of African Communities Together, a New York-based nonprofit group that advocates for Liberian and other African immigrants here in the U.S. Kasa knows that refuge from the horrors of Liberia's ongoing civil war was the main reason President Bill Clinton created the DED program.
So, yes, the Liberian Civil War was a major reason for the granting of DED. But, you know, unfortunately, Liberia's problems didn't end with the Civil War. And most recently, the Ebola epidemic unfortunately undid some of the rebuilding progress that Liberia had made. So it was really up to the Trump administration whether they wanted to continue this program or terminate it. And unfortunately, we think they made the wrong decision.
In its memorandum outlining its rationale for allowing the DED program for Liberians to expire, the Trump administration declared that conditions in Liberia have improved. The armed conflict that killed hundreds of thousands of people is 12 years in the past. The economy is growing, and a peaceful transfer of presidential power is complete. Kasa acknowledges that Liberia has made impressive progress.
And we're grateful for that. But the truth is that Liberia still has extremely high rates of unemployment. There's still significant damage to the health infrastructure from the Ebola epidemic. There's still concerns about food security. So the idea that people could return to Liberia and you know, that the Liberian economy could absorb thousands of returning Liberians, it's not realistic.
Kasa says that requiring DED recipients to leave the U.S. would cause great suffering. Many Liberians have been here for decades. They've raised families in the U.S., started businesses, and contributed to their communities and to America overall. He says forcing their return would upend those achievements and break up families. Still, Kasa admits that many Liberians in the U.S. are relieved by one aspect of Trump's memorandum.
Given the administration's record, there was some concern that they might move to terminate status immediately. You know, under this announcement, people will continue to have legal status and work authorization for the next year. But at the same time, a termination is a termination.
In Syria, Afghanistan, Venezuela, and South Sudan, conditions are far worse than in present-day Liberia. VOA asked Kasa why Liberian nationals should be allowed to stay when people from those nations are ineligible for DED benefits.
So we would support relief for other countries that are experiencing dislocation and humanitarian crises, especially for those nationals that have already been in the U.S. for decades. and have built lives and families here. So we would argue that it's not just Liberia, it's other countries as well.
Amaha Kasa is the executive director of African Communities Unite, a New York-based nonprofit that provides immigration counseling and other services to Africans living in the United States. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
You are listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Mm-hmm. 20 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Abiy Ahmed, a 42-year-old former Minister of Science and Technology, is set to be Ethiopia's new Prime Minister. And Egypt is wrapping up its three-day election process with little doubt that President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi will win a second term. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. A Kenyan opposition leader remains detained at Nairobi Airport, barred from entering the country despite a judge's order that authorities allow him to appear before the High Court today. The standoff has called into question the public reconciliation of Kenya's top political rivals earlier this month. Rael Ombor has more from Nairobi.
Opposition supporters on Wednesday blocked the main highway linking the cities of Kisumu and Kakamega, lighting bonfires. The protesters were demanding the release of high-ranking opposition leader Miguna Miguna. Kenya's High Court on Tuesday ordered that Miguna be released and appear in court on Wednesday morning, but the government did not comply. The court has ordered three senior government officials to appear in court Thursday to face sentencing for defying the court order. Miguna's lawyer, Nelson Harvey, said Miguna's detention at the Nairobi airport is illegal and a violation of his rights.
He's held up in a confined area, actually in a washroom, without sufficient space for even to move around. He's not been provided food. He's not been given access to us as his lawyers. We've been at the airport since yesterday morning. We were not able to see him.
Miguna was first arrested in January. His arrest was linked to his involvement with the so-called swearing-in of Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga as the People's President. Authorities deported Miguna to Canada, where he is a citizen. He tried to return to Kenya on Monday. His lawyer and the government disagree what happened next. Officials say Miguna refused to enter Kenya on a Canadian passport and refused to take up an offer of a six-month visa, insisting he was not a foreigner. Mwenda Njoka is a spokesman for the Ministry of Interior and Coordination of National Government. He said Miguna is making trouble for himself on purpose.
He's being asked to do what everybody does at the airport. You arrive and you give the passport, it's stamped and you're allowed in. So what is so difficult for him to do that?
Harvey said Miguna is a Kenyan citizen by birth and can enter the country as he pleases.
The government has Miguna's passport. What they need to do is to reissue that passport, take the passport, stamp it entry, and Miguna, kaboom, is inside the country.
Harvey told VOA he's asking the courts to order Miguna's immediate release and readmit him to the country. The attorney said the government is acting in contempt of court orders and setting a dangerous precedent. Njoka said the government is not violating any court orders.
We give him, an opportunity. He just wants to be treated specially. Let me just summarize it this way. He's a drama queen who wants to be treated, given special treatment, and he enjoys that kind of publicity.
Earlier this month, Odinga and President Uhuru Kenyatta announced they will work together, an initiative both sides said was aimed at healing divisions caused by last year's presidential election. Miguna was against the newfound unity and accused Odinga of betraying his millions of supporters. During Miguna's detainment this week, Odinga was present for a couple of hours and could be seen trying to prevent his re-deportation by immigration officials. Odinga has since remained silent on the matter. Rael Ombor, VOA News, Nairobi.
The fallout continues from the ball tampering scandal that has rocked Cricket Australia in the midst of its four-test series in South Africa. Captain Stephen Smith and Vice Captain David Warner have been banned for 12 months, while teammate Cameron Bancroft was banned for 9. All three have been sent home ahead of the next test starting Friday in Johannesburg. Smith and Warner also have been barred from the Indian Premier League, where the $1.9 million contracts were among the tournament's richest for foreign players. Warner also has been told he will never be allowed to serve as captain in Australia's team. TV footage of the test in Cape Town last week showed Bancroft using yellow tape to scuff up the ball to gain an advantage with more spin before stuffing the tape in his trousers. Smith later admitted the move was planned by the team's leadership group. Cricket Australia says the incident has hurt the reputation of all sports in the country. Orphans who study at the Malawi Charity's free schools are learning to make prosthetic limbs. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre about the Jacaranda Foundation's program.
Trainer Robert Burke has been doing vocational skills training at the Jacaranda Foundation for 15 years. Earlier programs included making friendship bracelets and small moccasins for orphaned babies.
It could be soon, it'd be cheaper. It could soon be cheaper to operate a factory of robots in the United States than employing
the students who are selected to assemble.
It could soon be cheaper to operate a factory of robots in the United States than employing manual labor in Africa. That's the stark conclusion of a report from a London-based research institute, which warns that automation could have a devastating effect on developing economies unless governments invest urgently in digitalization and skills training. Henry Ridgewell has more.
The rhythmic sounds of the factory floor. At this textile plant in Rwanda, hundreds of workers sit side by side at sewing machines, churning out clothes that will be sold in stores across the world. Outsourcing production by using cheap labour in the developing world has been a hallmark of the global economy for decades, but technology could be about to turn that on its head. Research from the Overseas Development Institute focused on the example of furniture manufacturing in Africa. Karishma Banga co-authored the report.
In the next 15 to 20 years, robots in the US are actually going to become much cheaper than Kenyan labor, particularly in the furniture manufacturing industry. So this means that around 2033, American companies will find it much more profitable to reshore production back, which means essentially get all the jobs and production back from the developing countries to the US. And that obviously, you know, can have very significantly negative effects for jobs in Africa.
As robots are getting cheaper, she says, people are getting more expensive.
So the cost of a robot or the cost of a 3D printer, they're declining at similar levels around 6% annually. So, you know, that's a significant decline, whereas wages in developing countries are rising.
There's no doubting the challenges posed by automation to manual labour in developing countries, but some are fighting back. The Fun Kids furniture factory in Kenya breaks with the traditional mould of production. Automated saws cut perfect templates using computer-aided designs, overseen by skilled programmers and operators. The investment is paying off with rapid growth and expansion into Uganda and Rwanda. But Kenyan CEO Chiru Waweru Waithaka says she can't find the right employees.
We have machines that sit idle because we don't have skilled people. There's many people who need jobs. Yes, we agree. But if they have no skill, I'd love to employ you, but you need a skill. Otherwise, you cannot operate our machines. So we are urging all institutions, government, please, let's take this skills gap as a crisis.
That call is echoed by the ODI report authors, who urge African governments to use the current window of opportunity to build industrial capabilities and digital skills before the jobs crunch hits. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.